Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A really tough place to be right now is Milwaukee Bucks fandom. The Bucks are down 3-1 against the Miami Heat in the opening round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The one seed on the ropes after a disastrous collapse on Monday night in Miami. The Bucks had a 15-point lead at one point in the second half. They led by 12 with about six and a half minutes to go. They end up losing by 6 points. Jimmy Butler on one, 56 points, had an unbelievable Herculean performance for his injury-depleted Miami Heat team. And the Bucks now find themselves in a very dark place. It has happened before that an 8 seed has beaten a 1 in the first round of the NBA playoffs since they went to 7 games. The 7-game format in 2003 was the first year of that. It has happened 3 times before. The Bucks do not want to join that list. This is their title aspirations, obviously, very much in the balance. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski, Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is back from Miami. The Bucks will play game 5 at Pfizer Forum on Wednesday night. We'll need a win now in 3 straight games to preserve their season, to keep things going. And Jim, how do I start this? You know what? I'm just going to echo a question I saw on Twitter a lot after and during this collapse in game 4. What the f*** happened, Jim? what was that? How do you even explain it?
It was pretty amazing what Jimmy Butler did, and I have to start with him. But that doesn't happen without the what the bleep, right? Like they didn't score for huge chunks of time in the second half after really kind of having their way. At least inside in the first half, Brooke Lopez, tremendous performance. His 2-man game with Giannis was unstoppable. Shots didn't go in, which we've seen, but like Kyle Lowry ripping Drew Holiday twice, you know, Caleb Martin, you know, takes 4 shots, hits 2 threes. And one of them is like a dagger in the fourth quarter, when the Bucks kind of get caught in between on help defense, and he's just like, I guess I'm going to take this. And it goes in like I'm stunned by where this team is at. In general, 3-1, it makes sense if you sort of like take certain things from beginning with Giannis Antetokounmpo's injury, but like inside baseball, like, okay, so Game 5, Game 6 is on the road in Miami. They're up 15 late in the third quarter, JR. And I legit, like, I open up and I start looking at flights for Game 6, looking at the hotel rate. Now, I learned, you know, during the Packers NFC title loss to the Seahawks, like, ooh, you don't book anything until, you know, the game is over. But I was looking, you know, and it just, I don't know. I'm really surprised. Like, the Heat and Jimmy Butler specifically took the Bucks' best punch in the first quarter, and because the Milwaukee left them standing, what happened, and we can maybe get into some specifics, JR. But the broader question is, right? Like, this is the one seed. This was a 58-win team. They had lost 6 times, not including the last 2 games, 6 times since the middle of January. They've lost 3 times in a week and a half. Like, a lot of this just isn't making a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I forgot that you covered that game, the Packers game, because we could talk about that a little later, comparing this to that in terms of Wisconsin sports disasters. There's obviously some key differences and some very unfortunate similarities, but yes, Jimmy Butler was tremendous, and good for him. Like, that was a remarkable, unforgettable performance. I happen to think that Jimmy Butler could score 60, and the Bucks should still win based on what the Bucks have depth wise. You know, you talked about some of the other guys who stepped up and made some huge shots late. But just now, overall, there's a full trend. This is a mediocre offensive Heat team coming into the playoffs. They then lose their best shooter in Tyler Hero in the first game with a broken wrist. They've lost Victor Oladipo in game three. Really unfortunate. I mean, the guy has had just so many injury trouble and so many injury problems. And then this was a pretty catastrophic looking injury. He's not one of their main guys at this point, but he is still a big piece of their depth. I mean, they are down to just a handful of guys that can make plays, and they still weren't able to hold them off. They've still, in this whole series, have not been able to shut this team down. This team is rolling up the points, and that just confuses me because I know how good the Bucks can be defensively. I mean, they have Brook Lopez, a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. Giannis, who I think we can all safely argue is one of the best defensive players in basketball, and Drew Holiday, who's possibly the best defensive guard in the NBA. Those three guys alone, you got to think. Now Giannis has been out, which we've talked about, and we'll talk more about. I guess, before we get to some of that stuff, let's look ahead here. Okay, the odds that they can do this. You know, we've seen LeBron come back 3-1 on the Golden State Warriors. Like, there's literally no scenario that is crazier than that. It can be done. And the Bucks are favored to win this series. They're going to be double-digit favorites coming back at home to win that game, game five, and send this back to Miami. In essence, they're in the same place they were when they lost game one. Take care of business at home, win one game in Miami, and everything is still kind of in front of them. There's no doubt this Bucks team can win three straight games against the Heat. What's concerning is seeing this now become a trend. Four games in a row where the Heat have had excellent offensive performances. Even in the game that the Bucks won, the Heat were very good offensively. And at some point, you have to say to yourself, why can't the Bucks shut down this very mediocre offensive team? What is going on here on defense? So I guess basically what I'm asking is, what odds you're looking at that the Bucks team can in fact save this series, salvage it, win it, completely make us forget about the first round? Is there still enough hope in your mind that is something that can definitely happen?
Yeah, I wrote about this at jsonline.com, JR. Like, yeah, on paper, the rational mind says it's completely possible. I don't gamble. I would imagine that the Bucks, if they play 5, 6, and 7, would be probably the individual game favorites in each, as they should be. And this,
of course,
excuse me, this is even if Giannis somehow cannot go going forward, which maybe we'll get into, or he can, and he's still somewhat limited. And oh, by the way, limited Giannis is a triple double.
Yes.
Like, yeah, they're the better team. Like, no one will convince me of that otherwise, other than Jimmy Butler, who, you know, I guess if they win, he could say we're the better team, and I'll just say no. You walked on water for a week, and that's amazing. like it. That's why some of this just doesn't make sense, because yeah, like even the you're right, JR. Like, letting the one team star score all the points generally is a like recipe for success. The problem is Duncan Robinson shooting 76% from the 3-point line, JR.
That's like a 32% 3-point shooter this year. He's not the Duncan Robinson.
Caleb Martin is hitting key shots. Like, Cody Zeller had to play 7 minutes last night. And look, was it sexy? No, but guess who had a running thunderous dunk and then blocked a shot on the other end and had a key rebound. Like, yeah, 7 minutes, but if Jimmy scores 56, you can't have Cody Zeller get that basket. You can't have Highsmith hit a key three in a key moment. And it kind of worked. Like, Bam Adebayo did not have a good game.
No.
Max Strus had no points. Kevin Love only had 6 points, but the rest of the Heat just did enough. Like, Kyle Lowry, 6 points, but he had 5 assists, mm-hmm. and he stole the ball from Drew Holiday twice.
There's also, by the way, there's a good chance no one knew in Milwaukee the name Haywood Highsmith until yesterday, and right. he's out there contributing.
Everything in the rational mind says the Bucks should win at home, and then 3-2. Okay, got momentum back. Weather the first punch in Game Six. Win the game. Like, you see it. It's there. It's been done in history. It's not like a 3-0 deficit, which is 0-for-148. 13 teams have come back from 3-1 The most recent in a non-bubble scenario was in 2016 when the two finals contestants, Cavaliers and Warriors, each did it. Jrue Holiday actually was part of a team that did it when Derrick Rose blew out his knee in game one back in 2012. And the Bulls lost that series to Jrue Holiday 76ers. Maybe there's a comp there that Giannis has not been available and essentially out for the first three games. But yeah, JR, it's there. It's just, man, they've got to do so many things just better. And on paper, you say those things can be done. But to your broader point, it has not been done yet at any point, even in the game they won.
So obviously Giannis is a top conversation topic here. He did not play in games two or three. Of course, the Bucks played very well in game two without him. In game three, it was quite bad. It was much like game one, where Miami kind of took control somewhat early in the game and never really quite gave it back. Giannis's back injury clearly is affecting him. I mean, that's one of the strangest triple doubles I think I've ever seen, because he was so good. His passing was so crisp. And you could tell he was also just very limited, but still effective and still contributing. You know, I think there had to be at least some concern, because he didn't play, you know, in game three at a time when the series is tied 1-1. Either that's just extreme caution, believing that they're going to win, or he's really hurt. And the way that Mike Budenholzer was talking about it sure made it sound like they were certainly entertaining him not playing in game four at a point where they're in deep, dire straits, you know. So that tells you, at least it tells me, that this is really a big injury. This is really a big deal. And yes, he was able to get out there, but he looked limited. Now, I'm not going to criticize the production, because the production was incredible. It was great. I don't think him being tentative or anything cost them really anything in that game. So, but it's worth noting that you don't have your star player at 100%. Like, maybe we've seen him before, Jim, in his regular season history even. He'll go off. He'll have an incredible offensive game. Or both ends of the floor, but then is bothered by an injury, and then he'll have to miss like the next week, you know. So I can't even say with certainty that I think he's gonna make it through the series. So what are you hearing about Giannis's injury? What sort of observations are you surprised he played at this point? Like what are your takeaways here with Giannis and his health?
I mean, I'm a little surprised that he played. There just wasn't much of an indication until early. Before game four, when we saw him at shoot around in game three on the road in Miami, he was present at shoot around, but was not on the court and quickly left the court when we were allowed in. In this instance, now he wasn't running around, moving around. Like, we don't get to see that part of it, but he was shooting free throws. He appeared to be in a good mood. He went through his pregame routine, which was always the biggest key for us in seeing Giannis. Like, it was a little later than he usually does, but he went through it all, the whole workout. So at that point, you kind of knew, okay, he's gonna go. But yeah, JR, I mean, at the end of the game, I mean, he scored 3 points in the fourth quarter, and it was a key basket. Like, it was a three. You know, Bucks come out of a timeout. Up one, the Heat are on a run, as they were the entire fourth. Gives them an and-one, three-point play. You know, they go up 104-102 with 3 minutes left. Now, that's a lot of basketball, but it's just, you know, he looked exhausted. Mm-hmm. And he looked injured. And there's a difference between hurt and injured, as we know.
Yeah.
So I don't. And look, they left very early in the morning out of Miami. It's an off day on the day we record this. And then it's home. Then if they win, it's an 8:35 probably tip, JR. Like, if he somehow plays, they're leaving very early in the morning again to go to game six. Like, this is the hard part of the playoffs now. Like, you get these breaks in the early series. So, no, I would not be shocked if, after we record this and the first injury reports come out, he's doubtful or he's just out.
Dang, Jim.
To the point also that I wouldn't be surprised if he remains questionable and tries to just fight through what this is, because it's, you know, if he doesn't want to, but, you know, be sitting. But I also know, like, look, that ankle roll in the bubble, right? Like, he was hurt. He was hurt. So unfortunately, we've seen it before. So I, yeah, it's, you have to commend the effort and the will and what he did to set this team up. We could argue, JR, that they should have won the game in the first quarter, if not for Jimmy Butler. It felt like game two in that way. Like, it should have been 33-12.
Yeah.
And Jimmy wanted nothing to do with that, and it just, and the Bucks just couldn't put him away after that.
22-point first quarter from Jimmy Butler, and again, he ends up with 56 points. Truly a transcendent performance, and good for him. Marquette University alumnus, Milwaukee Bucks fans would probably be celebrating this if it weren't coming at the expense of their team. So if Giannis is out, even if he's limited, you've got to rely on your next two best guys. That's Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, and Brook Lopez to a degree. But Brook Lopez, 33 points in this game. He was a recipient of some great passes inside, and I think Brook has given you what you'd expect. Drew and Chris, not so much. Drew Holiday had a really bad game. And Chris Middleton, I think, was pretty good in game three, seemed to struggle quite a bit in game four, especially defensively. We're just not seeing them as strong as they are now. Now, Drew Holiday, it's easy to forget this because 2021 happened and Drew Holiday had a big role in that, but he has had some confounding playoff performances. He's gone cold at times, shooting-wise. He's made some tough turnovers. And turnovers have been a big part of the Bucks story this year anyway, so that's not too beyond what you might have come to expect from this team. But those guys have got to fill that void. And Chris Middleton, we've seen him do it before, but he has been dinged up this year and he has not played long stretches. And I wonder if we're kind of seeing that come to roost. I think you could theoretically just say we're kind of seeing that the roster is pretty old. You know, these guys, at some point, you say they are going to break down around this time of year after a long regular season, no matter how much they've been, rested and they've planned for this. At some point, you do have to acknowledge that this team relies on older players, and that could potentially come back to bite them. I don't know if we're quite at that stage, if we're blaming age for this. It's really just kind of a lackluster performance from these guys. And I don't know if you see it quite as negatively as I do. I don't know how you grade those guys, but I feel like without them stepping up, that was what opened the door and allowed the Heat to win that game in game four.
Yeah, they needed. I'll start with Chris. If Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo combined for 21 assists, like they did in game four, like typically they win, right? So again, that's part of that thing that just like doesn't make sense when you look at this stuff. And Chris, 4-for-12. Okay. He fouled out, he was on the wrong end of a couple turnovers where Jimmy Butler's streaking to the lane. And look, like Chris tried. At that point, it's either you try to contest, but you're in no man's land. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of those fouls that I don't know if that really was on him per se. But he didn't make some shots that you're just used to Chris Middleton making when the Bucks need it. Like he's usually that guy in terms of the key jumper, right? Like there was the three-pointer when they're up 107-105. Drew hit a three to give them the lead back. Kyle Lowry throws it out of bounds. They're like, in the past, you feel like that's it. All right, Chris, boom, hit the three. Bucks go up four. Like we've seen, like legit have seen that, right? Like he sort of hits the dagger in not just maybe the game winner, but like give his team some breathing room, and he just didn't make those. Now Drew is interesting. So after game three, we asked him like, "Hey, we know that you're you and you guard the best player and you're also asked to score, but like, look, Jimmy's doing Jimmy things, and you're the one guarding him. Like, is this taking a toll?" And Drew is Drew, and he says, I can't be tired. Like, this is what it is. He's not going to ask for help. He's not going to make an excuse. I find it hard to think that how hard he's having to work. And that's the thing. Like, Jimmy Butler's doing this against Drew Holiday. For the better part of 35 minutes a game. Like, we've talked about this on Press Row all series, JR. none of us have seen anyone do this to Drew Holiday. Like, the best scorers in the league have not done this to him for a full game or multiple games. So I don't know if there is a direct cause correlation, you know, between offense, defense here. It's an easy line to make. But yeah, 6 of 19, 2 for 11. I don't know if Drew Holiday taking the most threes on the team is what you want. But he's been so good at those step backs. He's been so good at times. If he's open, you got to shoot it, right? That's part of it. You know, the bench, for as good as they were in game two, Joe Ingles, Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, 3 for 11.
Yeah, nowhere to be found. Line. Game four.
Like, you make two of those, you win the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Chris 2 for 5, not great. Grayson 2 for 5, not great. But, like, it goes beyond me. Again, it goes into the it doesn't make sense thing, JR, where the Heat are making just enough clutch baskets and the Bucks just haven't. And, yeah, the two other guys, Chris and Drew, haven't really had the signature performance in any of these games, really, to, you know, to not have them in this hole.
A lot of what you see on Bucks Twitter centers around adjustments. You know, how do they not adjust to stopping Butler, to stopping the three-point shooting, to stopping just the Miami Heat cooking on offense in general? And that's always difficult because often those suggestions are made without obvious answers or certainly without answers that they haven't already tried. We go down this pathway and it will lead to what becomes of Mike Budenholzer if they don't win this series. So that's where we're headed. But before we get there, is there an obvious adjustment they can make? I mean, you're kind of laying it out here. Like these are the best defenders on the best players, and the best players are just making plays for the Miami Heat. So, well, Jimmy Butler is making plays for the Miami Heat. So at some point, there's only so much you can do. Is there something, though, that you've noticed that you feel like they should be doing to counteract this? This is desperation time, after all.
Right. So, first, what they have tried. I believe game one, everybody but Giannis got a turn on Jimmy Butler because Giannis got hurt. And when I say everybody, it was Drew Holiday started, Chris Middleton, Jay Crowder, Wesley Matthews, Grayson Allen. Obviously, that didn't work. Game two, does anyone really remember? Because Jimmy scored 25. He stayed in the game late, and, you know, some of his buckets came a little bit later. The Bucks were so hot that, like, they just steamrolled the Heat, and no one really paid attention, I don't think, right? Because Jimmy still had a decent game on the stat line. Wesley Matthews has been out. Is Wesley the missing piece? I'd say no, but he is someone who would be guarding Jimmy. Giannis has been out. I think that would have been the obvious change should after game one. Like if Giannis had stayed healthy, I think we'd be seeing more of Giannis on Jimmy like we did 2 years ago. That has also been taken off the table. So we've talked about the Heat injuries. Now we're talking about probably Mike Budenholzer's two of his three top options to guard Jimmy. And Wes and Giannis. So in the first quarter, arguably you could say there are two moments where the Heat won the game. First quarter with Jimmy single-handedly keeping them in it. And early fourth where the Bucks had an 11-point lead and the Heat reserves somehow cut it to 8 before Jimmy returned. But in that first quarter, Jimmy was 9 of 10. And he got Drew. He got Giannis. He got Chris. He got Brooke. I mean, what are we talking about? Like, those are the best guys. So it didn't even come up, JR, that Jay Crowder didn't play post-game because it's Drew Holiday. Right? Like, I get the whole thing of, like, well, didn't they acquire Drew Holiday for this? And you could argue – or Jay Crowder – and maybe you could argue to a degree, yes, but it's Drew Holiday. Like, to me, if you're going to, like, I don't know if it's a like a Josh Hader comparison. Like, if you're going to lose in the bottom of the ninth on a home run, you want that dude throwing 99 and you lose on that, right? Like, you don't want to lose on picking at the corners or trying to be cute, right? Like, if you're a football team, you don't want to lose on like some trick thing. Like, you go with your bread and butter. And I get why Bud's the easy target, but it's Drew Holiday. So I would do the same thing. Okay. So now let's put that aside. Four games, as we have said, Jimmy Butler, masterpiece. I haven't seen a ton of playoff basketball. I would argue this was better than any of Kevin Durant's performances in the semifinals. And that's saying something. Okay, going forward, I will say this. And I know I'm not going to be the only one. I think Jay Crowder, we heard about Jay being the PJ Tucker comp and what he brings, et cetera, et cetera. Is he going to stop Jimmy? No. But Jay also has 6 fouls. And I just wonder if the Bucks just need to try to beat him up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't.
Marquette on Marquette crime.
And look, I get the idea to a degree of sending help to force Jimmy to pass. The problem the Bucks have had through 4 games is when Jimmy's passed, Duncan Robinson hit 76% of his threes. These other guys are still making enough shots. And now we're going back into the Grant Williams conversation, which was the whole point of this season, right? Which was the Bucks don't do that this year. They didn't win 58 games. They weren't one of the best teams defending the 3-point line this year. Because they changed all that because it didn't work in crunch time. Like, do you want Duncan Robinson or Kevin Love or Gabe Vincent taking 23s? No, because those guys actually they know they could make them. Like, Grant was the mathematical choice there. So I don't know. Like, maybe you can throw some bodies at Jimmy a couple of times, maybe in key moments to slow him down in that way. But I do think the one obvious thing is if Jimmy's going to the line anyway, like he has been, then rather than Chris pick up some fouls in transition or Drew get a reach-in foul or Brooke catch a hip foul, like have Jay go in there and do the damn thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And if it's 6 minutes and 6 fouls, okay. But it's meatheaded, Jared. It's totally meatheaded, right? That makes no basketball sense whatsoever. But, I wonder if that's – I don't know what else that's truly applicable if Giannis isn't healthy, Wes isn't available, and you have Drew Holiday. It's just one of those things where I don't know what else they can do at this point against a guy who's having a literal all-time playoff series.
Yeah. Meathead, but it makes desperation, man. Desperate times, desperate measures. But let's go beyond this series, which will be, and again, I'll mention this in a second. It's hard to even gauge right now how catastrophic this would be in terms of Wisconsin sports history. But Mike Budenholzer's been here 5 years. The Bucks, of course, have won an NBA title. So it's, on the one hand, it's always crazy to me to talk about somebody's, job performance when they've won an NBA title in the last 2 years, 3 years. Like, it seems crazy. But you look at the other 4 years, 3 of the times, if they do lose this series, 3 times, they will have been the better seed and they end up losing a playoff series. Sure, one is the bubble, but one is the 1 seed. Like, that would be pretty bad. In the other occasion against the Celtics, last year, they that was a hard-fought series, went 7 games. Bucks did have a chance to win that series. They're up 3-2, and they had a home game, and they couldn't put it away. Now, obviously, you don't lay every little detail at the feet of Bud, but taken all together, that starts to become a little bit of a track record. And Budenholzer has, 3 times now, had the best record in the regular season. And that's not enough, So, you have to give him credit for that. But at some point, that's not how his career will be judged in Milwaukee. That is not what people are thinking about going into the next year or anything like that. Like, and he'd even acknowledge that because they sort of took the foot off the gas the year they won the championship and ended up as the 3 seed, and it still worked out for them. So I don't really know. I legitimately do not know what to say about Mike Budenholzer. I don't know if I could say with certainty that everyone's crazy for thinking he should be fired, that he would be back. I also don't know if I can say with certainty that I think he shouldn't be fired. I'm really kind of stuck here. So where's your head at in terms of how what the fallout would be if the Bucks lose this series?
Right. And it feels somewhat improbable that just a short time ago, you know, we were on with Lori Nickel and Ben Steele, and we spoke about the Bucks like not winning the championship and like decisions that would need to be made. I none of us imagined that like the next podcast we do, JR, could be, you know, the season ending wrap up. This, you know, May 1, right? Or earlier. So I'm not someone who calls for jobs, but I think it's undeniable what you said is you this year would be a historic collapse. Like they would be the sixth number one seed in NBA history to lose in the first round. The fifth in the 7-game format.
Oh, a fourth. Only the fourth.
The fourth. Okay. Yeah. So that's not good. You could say when you just put the paper down that they have underachieved in 3 of the 5 playoffs. You could also then, on a rational level, look at the 3 of those 5 and said, bubble plus Giannis injury,
mm-hmm.
Chris Middleton injury,
mm-hmm.
Giannis injury. We have talked all year long in a lot of degrees about the roster and how we have felt they've had good rosters, you know, and good players. And this team has spent a lot of money in the tax. And so that's all like, those are all true things. So, it's really interesting. And normally, JR, what I would say is like having covered the Packers when they made their coaching change, having, you know, covered potential coaching changes in Cincinnati for many years. Like I could see both sides of that where it's, hey, disappointing stuff happens. You can't overlook certain bodies of work, but also like you can't also just fire the roster, right? Like if you truly feel all of the players were good enough and yet the result wasn't, what do you come down to? Like, and you know, this offseason's interesting though, JR, because in a way, if this happens, be it this series or next series, which would still be an underachieving, like you can't actually like change the roster. And then it's like, oh my goodness, like where is what? Whoa, right? So, I can't imagine the conversations John Horst and his staff or Wes Edens, the new governor, and Jimmy Haslam, the new co-owner, what they have been talking about in the last handful of days. Because I can almost guarantee, while John Horst, I'm sure, is always prepared, I can't imagine they were prepared for this. And like, wait a minute, what? Like, this weekend? I know I'm not really directly saying anything about Bud specifically, but I think it's laying it all out that like I believe there's 2 years left on his contract, for whatever that's worth. You know, I wonder if optics plays a role. Like, do you just have to do make decisions regardless of new ownership coming in and whatever that may look like in market and or be perceived as. I don't know, man. It's tough. It is tough because it's really hard to ignore 58 wins and all of the success and how good they were. But it's also hard to ignore what's happened or what could happen if it does, JR. It's pretty wild that we're even like having this conversation before May.
Yeah, that the season could be over before May. Yeah, the optics is interesting. You know, I think what you're trying to say is, will it look like Jimmy Haslam stepped in, became an owner, and immediately threw his weight around to ask for a new head coach, wanted a fresh start? I think you could also view it, if you wanted, as this is a good time to get a fresh start, and because there's a new owner. One way or another, though, it would come down on Jimmy Haslam in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not sure the Bucks or the Haslams, I have no idea, would be quite interested in making that move. You've got a guy like Nick Nurse suddenly on the market, the Raptors coach, who of course beat the Bucks in the 2019 Eastern Conference Finals with Toronto, who's a surprise ouster, which illustrates to me, number one, in the NBA, guys get fired all the time who are, you know, coach of the year candidates get fired in the NBA. It's often kind of baffling. I mean, this is extenuating circumstances going back to 2010 when LeBron left Cleveland, but Mike Brown had led them to what, 65 wins or 61 wins? They had the best record in the East, and he got fired because they had an uninspiring playoff ouster. And not that I do think that Budenholzer should fit into that category at all, but I do think there's probably people that would be interested in the job, certainly some high quality candidates. So it wouldn't be for lack of a talented alternative. I don't know. I'm really at a crossroads with that, because also we could wake up on Monday morning and all of this could not matter. This might all be ancient, nobody's worried about it history, because the Bucks are in the second round of the playoffs, having won three in a row. We know they can do that. They did it against the Heat just a couple years ago, and many of these same players were still on that team. So we know that they are capable of it. Obviously Giannis's health plays a huge role in that. And I don't know, Jim, I mean, let's say they do win three in a row. They play the Knicks maybe in the second round. Knicks are up 3-1 in their series, which, man, the path is just wide open for the Bucks. Does this, though, the way they've struggled, do you look at this team differently? Do you say this is just not a championship caliber team? Like, maybe they survive this series, but this has opened up everybody's eyes to where their weaknesses are, and that they simply just don't have it, you know? Like, is it, even though that's just not something that was entering my brain a few days ago, would you go that far? Like, how would you look at them if they do survive this series?
If they survive this series, clearly something changed with handling Jimmy Butler. And that's obviously a good thing. That to me is independent of Giannis. Like, to me, the Bucks without Giannis should still be good enough to beat the Miami Heat. I'd even go so far as to say it'd be a tough series, because the Knicks also defend, that they should beat the Knicks. Could be seven games without Giannis, for instance. But no, they're not a championship team without him. Like, that's where the line is drawn. Like, they're not going to beat Boston without him. Now, I'm not making the proclamation that he's like out for all of these series.
Sure,
but
no.
That's what I'm going with that. Like, you mentioned, are they a championship level team? Like, they are if he's on the court. And I just don't know if he's going to be available enough in the hole they're in. Like, if this was 2-2, and you're like, okay, you got to win in six, and you get like the 3.5 days at home before, because it looks like the Knicks are going to be done earlier. Okay, yeah, like you could see, you know, maybe him getting better physically. I don't see how he gets better physically.
No, I don't either.
Now, I mean, so
it's every other day. These games are every other day.
Yeah. So it probably took an effort that we may never truly know, JR, for him to do what he did in game four, physically, mentally, you know. So the broader question is, no, I don't think they're a favorite to win the championship as I thought they were going forward. But that's not because of this, it's because of him being this injured. But yeah, like on May 1st, again, we could be talking about previewing the Knicks and saying, wow, the Bucks got it together and here they go. And like, that's legit. And I would say, okay, they figured it out and they'll be in a better spot to handle Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle. And yeah, the Knicks would be a problem because they play like the Heat. They offensive rebound. They try hard all the time and run around all the time, like things that the Bucks kind of get caught napping on at times. And the Knicks turn teams over. Like, so yeah, that would be another tough series. And I would say the Bucks should win. So yeah, that's why I said it when we started this, Jay, like my rational mind watching this team in basketball, like, of course, it makes all the sense in the world if we're previewing the Eastern Conference semifinals at our next podcast. But, you know, the big guy's got to be on the court. And I think to whatever degree he can be will help them win. But the Butler, something's got to happen with Jimmy. I don't know what that is. Because it should have been enough in game four, JR. It should have been enough.
Yeah.
And that's all, like, Kyle Lowry, like, yes, hey, you all played. I'm not knocking that. But we're not idiots. We know what we saw. That was Jimmy. And they got to handle that game five. And then they got to do it again game six. And they got to do it again game seven. It can be done, but they need to figure it out in this off day in the morning of game five.
The Milwaukee Bucks will play Wednesday night, 8:35 start time. So in addition to fans being kind of obviously down on this team right now, they are going to have to stay up super, super late to watch that game. I predict that it's going to be a little bit quiet inside Pfizer Forum. They're going to have to bring some of their own energy, if I had to guess. And I would imagine they win by like 25 points. That seems to be what the logical mind would tell you. But if Giannis doesn't play, I think all bets are off. And then this could be the first time in history a one seed loses to an eight seed in five or four games. Pretty sobering to think about that, say that out loud. Okay, well, before I let you go, we'll go back to that Packers game, 2015, in Seattle, the meltdown that cost the Packers a trip to the Super Bowl. When I think of worst moment in Wisconsin sports history, that is the first thing that comes to mind for me. That's debatable. There's a lot of other things, especially, I mean, the Super Bowl 31, or 32, I should say. 31 was really quite nice. 32, when they lost to the Broncos in shocking fashion. Certainly there are other occasions you could point to, but that's the one for me. And I wonder where this ranks. Obviously you're not on the doorstep of a championship. So it's not like, I think actually back to that Brook Lopez fumble in game seven against the Nets that could have turned the tide there. That would have probably again, right, a moment no one talks about because it ended differently, but we would have talked about it for the end of time. Like it's not quite that level of like singular oopsie that costs you the way that you can point to something in that Packers game. It's still all-time stuff, Jim, and I don't know where it would quite rank, but I'd be tempted to put it at number two behind this Packers game of just all-time Wisconsin sports disappointments. This is a team that should win the championship, and they're not even going to make it out of the first round, is how it looks. So what about you? Where would you put this? I know this has caught you completely off guard. Maybe because it's the first round, you just can't elevate it as such, but how would you look at it?
Wow. I mean, first of all, I guess this is assuming they can't, you know, become the 14th team in history.
Oh, yeah. Again, we can totally forget about this. This could all be a conversation that we never had by Monday morning.
But I would say, I mean, just in general, the thing that pops to mind, no, it's not the same as a conference finals or a conference championship or a, you know, in a baseball case, league championship series loss or game loss, like, because that's you are on the doorstep and there's a certain level there. Like, the other team is a good team regardless of how good you were. Same thing with the Super Bowl. Like, I think that's like, I think you almost have to just put that, like, to me, that kind of stuff aside. For me, JR, I mean, I don't know how 2011 didn't come to mind. I mean, the 15-1 Packers and bye week and then just get trucked by the Giants at home. I mean, to me, that's the biggest comp. Like, you had the 58 win Milwaukee Bucks, the number one seed in all of basketball, with arguably the DPOY, arguably the MVP, arguably the sixth man of the year, two all defensive players, two all NBA players.
The McDonald's song is playing in my head, too. All beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on, like, a sesame seed bun.
And so 2011, like, the Packers smashed everybody 15-1. And then we know what happened. So, like, to me, that's the comp, because it was like, what is this? Like, you know, what did we just watch? Like, so that's it to me. I think championship losses, be it in the conference division or the Super Bowl, I think are different. It's that sure. Sort of, yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there was like a 100 win baseball team that lost in like the first round of something, right? Like, that would be the same thing. Like, what, you know, like, this, none of this makes sense. And I think that's where they're at. And if we're talking about something else on May 1st, or, that means that 58 win team, you know, showed up the last three games and, you know, kind of proved that that's who they are.
Yeah. Brewers, by the way, have never won 100 games. The 2001 Mariners had, I don't remember exactly, 112 wins. I think they set a record. Then they did not make it even to the ALCS. So yeah. There are some examples like that out there. You know, the more we talk about, I was dreading. I could feel it in the pit of my stomach that it was going to be a tough day when I woke up on Monday, and obviously it was looking pretty good there with Giannis being healthy to play and the Bucks leading for a lot of that game. But you know, I had a feeling it was going to be a tough one. I feel differently now. I feel like there's a chance here, a good chance here, that they bounce back and win those three games, and end up, you know, negating all of the stuff that we've been talking about. But hoo boy, at absolute best case scenario, it is a massive, massive scare, and worst case, one of the worst performances in Bucks history. Maybe go back to that year that the Bucks with Kareem lost in surprising fashion. I want to say to the Warriors or the 74 NBA Finals. Like, it's a small list. It's a small list of outcomes like this. The bubble comes to mind, of course, against the same Miami team. But we will see. I can't say for certain when our next podcast is coming. We might have a postmortem on the season pretty soon, or we might wait again until next Monday to try to wrap up the entire series. You'll have to just stay tuned. Keep an eye on your podcast feeds. You can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We'll definitely be posting on social media, on Twitter, letting you know where and when you can check out the next edition of the Point Forward podcast. But Jim, good luck to you, man. I'm sure all of Bucks Nation hopes that you get one more trip out to Miami at the very, very least, and we'll see where it goes from here. Thanks for joining me, man.
All right, thanks. Talk to you then.
We will talk to you again very soon. Thanks for listening to the Point Forward podcast. Again, he's Jim Ozarski. I'm J.R. Radcliffe. Ta-ta, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.